Hello, this is Betsy Waugh, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the Thursday, December 4th issue of the Democrat and Chronicle on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Wegmans recalls cheese over listeria concerns. By Marcia Greenwood, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network. Wegmans Food Markets is recalling Locatelli grated Pecorino Romano cheese with Wegmans scale labels because of the potential presence of the disease-causing bacteria Listeria monocytogenes. The affected product was packaged in plastic tubs with UPC code 2-77580-the weight in parentheses and sold between November 14th and 24th at Wegmans stores in Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Massachusetts, North Carolina, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. The recall was issued on November 26th. Listeria monocytogenes is an organism that can cause serious and sometimes fatal infections in young children, frail or elderly people, and people with weakened immune systems. Healthy people who are infected may suffer only short-term symptoms such as high fever, severe headache, stiffness, nausea, abdominal pain, and diarrhea, but listeria can cause miscarriages and stillbirths in pregnant women. No illnesses have been reported to date. Customers who still have the affected product should return it to stores for refunds. The reporter Marcia Greenwood's email is mgreenwood@rochester.gannett.com. Follow her on X at Marcia Greenwood. One Dead, Several Hurt in Crash on New York Thruway. By Emily Barnes, New York Connect Team, USA Today Network. One person has died after a two-car crash on the New York State Thruway in Albany on December 1st, according to state police. Braylon S. Fahey, F-A-H-Y, 30, of Fort Plain, Montgomery County, was driving a 2018 Chevrolet Traverse when she merged onto I-90 westbound from the exit 24 acceleration ramp, crossed all lanes of traffic, and was struck by a westbound 2025 Cadillac Escalade traveling in the left lane. Fahey was transported to Albany Medical Center and later pronounced dead, state police said. Two adults and three minors were inside the Traverse at the time of the crash, and the Escalade contained four adults. The driver of the Escalade, as well as all passengers in both vehicles, were transported to local hospitals with what are believed to be non-life-threatening injuries. The investigation into the incident is ongoing. The reporter Emily Barnes reports on consumer-related issues for the USA Today Network's New York Connect team, focusing on scam and recall-related topics. Follow her on X and Instagram at by Emily Barnes and get in touch at ebarnes@gannett.com. Woman killed in wrong way crash identified by the New York Connect Team USA Today Network. The New York State Police have identified the victim in a fatal two-vehicle collision that occurred at approximately 8:20 a.m. November 27th on Route 104 in Rochester. Investigators say Paulette D. Dean, 35, of Rochester, was driving a 2025 Nissan Altima westbound in the eastbound lanes when her vehicle struck a 2022 Mazda CX-30 operated by Matthew J. Krause, 32, of Rochester. Dean, who was not wearing a seatbelt, sustained fatal injuries and was pronounced dead at Strong Memorial Hospital, troopers said. Krause suffered non-life-threatening injuries and was also treated at Strong Memorial Hospital, troopers said. The crash occurred near the bridge underpass between Lake Avenue and St. Paul Street, prompting a temporary eastbound closure of Route 104. The investigation remains ongoing. South Bristol to see new playground, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network from South Bristol. South Bristol may be getting a new playground as soon as 2026. The South Bristol Town Board unanimously approved the installation of a community playground at Town Hall, 6500 Ganay Hill Road. The upgraded playground will replace aging equipment in place now and will serve a wider range of children ages 2 to 12. Site preparation is already underway, with installation expected to begin in the spring. Councilman Jim Strickland, who led the effort, emphasized the value of the project in a statement. Quote, "This playground will provide a safe, updated place for kids and family to enjoy for many years to come," unquote. Councilwoman Meg Fuller added in a statement that strong county sales tax numbers and careful budgeting led to the project's approval because it won't add a new burden on residents. Quote, "That's something I'm truly grateful for," Fuller stated. "Investments like this help keep South Bristol the kind of place where families feel welcome, connected, and proud to call home. And as my daughter Maisie said, yes," unquote. How old is too old to shovel snow? Age experts say danger increases. Victoria E. Friel and Emily Barnes from the New York Connect team, USA Today Network. With flurries flying and some measurable snow piling up this winter, you may be wondering, at what age should you stop shoveling snow? The chore, while mundane to some, can actually be quite dangerous and even fatal to people with underlying health conditions. According to the American Journal of Emergency Medicine, nearly 200,000 adults were treated in emergency rooms for snow shovel-related accidents between 1990 and 2006, and more than 1,600 deaths were reported in that same time frame, USA Today reported. Snow shoveling is a vigorous activity, one that puts a lot of demand on the body's heart and musculoskeletal system, according to Bethany Barron Gibbs, an epidemiology and biostatistics professor at West Virginia University and American Heart Association volunteer. Here's what to know about snow shoveling safety. How old is too old to shovel snow? There is no hard and fast rule when it comes to what age you should stop clearing your own driveway in the winter, but adults over the age of 45, quote unquote, should be cautious, as they stand to be part of an age group that is a higher risk of injury or fatality when snow shoveling, according to the American Heart Association. The association also advises people with any heart or musculoskeletal conditions, such as known or suspected heart conditions, high blood pressure or high cholesterol, or impaired balance, to take extra care when shoveling snow. The same goes for those who regularly smoke, are very inactive, are obese, or are habitually sedentary. How to risk injury when shoveling snow? The first and perhaps most obvious answer is to ask someone in good health to complete the chore. If that's not in the cards, plenty of precautions can be followed. Shovel a little at a time. Take breaks and dress appropriately. Experts also suggest to push or sweep snow rather than lifting and throwing it, because that involves less exertion. If the wind is blowing, be extra careful. Wind makes temperatures feel lower than they actually are and also impacts the body. Snow blowers are also safer and faster to clear a path rather than relying on a shovel. Research shows using a snow blower raises the heart rate to about 120 beats a minute, compared with a heart rate of about 170 beats a minute when shoveling, according to the American Heart Association. How does shoveling snow affect your heart? There are five main stressors on the heart when shoveling snow, Dr. Barry Franklin, retired American Heart Association expert, said in a news release. Static exertion that involves a contraction of muscles without movement in the surrounding joints. Arm work, which is more taxing on the heart than leg work. Strained body while lifting heavy loads, during which most people unknowingly hold their breath, which increases heart rate and blood pressure. Legs not in motion or not in frequent motion can lead to pooling of blood in the lower part of the body, which means it's not getting back to the heart for oxygenation. Cold air causes constriction of blood vessels, which disproportionately raises blood pressure and constricts coronary arteries. What are common symptoms of a cardiac event? According to the American Heart Association, common symptoms of a cardiac event, like a heart attack, include chest pain or pressure, lightheadedness, heart palpitations, and irregular heart rhythms. If you experience any of these symptoms while doing yard work this winter, stop. If the symptoms don't cease immediately, call 911. This article includes reporting by the new U.S. Today Network. Instacart sues New York City over pay and other laws. Claims changes could raise delivery costs. By Jonathan Stemple from Reuters. In New York, Instacart sued New York City on December 2nd to block enforcement of five laws affecting the grocery delivery company, including rules governing minimum pay for app-based workers and disclosures to customers about tipping. According to a complaint filed in Manhattan federal court, Congress forbade state and local governments from regulating prices and services for customers who use platforms such as Instacart, while New York State legislature has long taken charge of minimum pay standards. Instacart, based in San Francisco, also said the U.S. Constitution prevents states and cities from discriminating against commerce by out-of-state companies. The laws will take effect on January 26th and, absent an injunction, would harm consumers and grocers by raising delivery costs, Instacart said. Quote, this legal challenge is about standing up for fairness, for the independence that tens of thousands of New York grocery delivery workers rely on, and for affordable access to groceries for the people who need it most, Instacart said in a blog post. The New York City Department of Consumer and Worker Protection, which is one of the defendants, had no immediate comment. Instacart is the trade name for publicly traded Maple Bear. The lawsuit targets Local Law 124, which requires companies to offer grocery delivery workers the same minimum pay that restaurant delivery workers are eligible for. Instacart also objected to Local Law 107, which requires consumers to get options to tip at least 10% of the purchase price or manually enter what to tip. The other laws require additional record keeping and disclosures. According to Instacart, the laws are an outgrowth of measures affording more rights to restaurant delivery workers who saw business surge during the pandemic. Quote, Instacart's business depends on the flexibility, independence, and convenience that its platform offers, the complaint said. The local laws will degrade that business, unquote. Absent an injunction, quote, Instacart will be forced to restructure its platform, restrict shoppers' access to work, disrupt relationships with consumers and retailers, and suffer constitutional injuries with no adequate legal remedy, unquote, the complaint added. CDC may delay kids' vaccine for hepatitis B. Panel to vote on policy of shots to newborns by Michael Ehrman, Reuters. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s vaccine advisors will vote in the coming days on whether to delay hepatitis B shots for most American children, the new chair of the committee said, a move that would be the most consequential change since the health secretary began remaking vaccine policy. Delaying the decades-old practice of administering the hepatitis B vaccine to newborns is an idea that has been pushed by longtime anti-vaccine activist Kennedy. The committee has not settled on exactly how long to recommend pushing them back, the new committee had said in an interview. Some 3.5 American children of the year are recommended to get the shot on the day of their birth. Quote, we try to avoid giving things to the most vulnerable, unquote, said Kirk Milhone, a pediatric cardiologist named to run the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. He said this on December 1st. Quote, "We want to test these things incredibly thoroughly before we give it to them, especially in a neonatal period or in a pregnant mother. So these are things that we've a very high suspicion of," unquote. A review of more than 400 studies and reports by independent vaccine experts released December 2nd found the U.S. policy of giving the hepatitis V vaccine to newborns cut infections in children by more than 95%. The Vaccine Advisory Committee to the CDC has not spoken directly to vaccine makers about potential supply concerns they have raised that could result from delaying the shots, Milhone said. Quote, "We're not really dealing with that issue right now," he said. "We haven't had those discussions, and that might not be really appropriate for the committee to have those discussions outside of the meeting," unquote. Even small changes to the vaccination schedule could disrupt the supply of hepatitis B vaccine or others given in combination with that inoculation, such as the polio vaccine, for a year longer, several vaccine makers and experts told Reuters. The committee is scheduled to meet December 4th to 5th. Sources at vaccine makers who spoke on the condition of anonymity told Reuters the committee has not asked for specific data or details on how any changes to the hepatitis B vaccination schedule could impact vaccine supply. I'm going to pause here for a second and say you are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Democrat and Chronicle on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Continuing, as on this article about the CDC and vaccines, Kennedy cleared the way for CDC policy changes by ousting Director Susan Monterez over vaccine policy disagreements, as well as firing all 17 independent expert members of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and replacing them with his own nominees. Under his watch, the agency rewrote its website to say that evidence does not back the claim that vaccines do not cause autism, which is very contrary to established science. The CDC has also dropped recommendations for COVID shots for pregnant women and children, drawing criticism from major medical groups, and split up the combined measles, mumps, rubella, varicella vaccine for children younger than age 4. Hepatitis B is a viral infection that causes liver inflammation. It primarily spreads through blood, semen, or other certain bodily fluids, but can also be spread through more casual contact. In addition to Merck, GSK makes a hepatitis B vaccine, and Sanofi makes a combination shot with Merck that includes 6 different vaccines. The hepatitis B vaccine is currently recommended for all American children in a series of 3 shots. The first shot is given in hospital soon after a child is born, with the final 2 generally administered as a part of combination shots. The multi-dose shot includes vaccines against other illnesses like diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, polio, and Haemophilus influenza type B. The combination shots could become useless if the recommendations on timing for the vaccines no longer align, Gravenstein said. Quote, "This is what I call the tyranny of just-in-time inventory," Gravenstein said. "To maximize efficiency, they will have minimized their stockpile, and if there's an abrupt change, it could lead to shortages," unquote. Sanofi, at the last ACIP meeting, said any delay could, quote, "cause significant supply disruptions for a year or longer as production of vaccines is adjusted given the long lead time required," unquote. Merck has said that changes to the established schedule could lead to a resurgence of preventable disease. Analysts anticipate an inflation surge in 2026. Andrea Riker, USA Today. Will President Donald Trump's massive tax law passed in July turn out to be more sweeping than policymakers expected? the enacted legislation, which Republican leaders dubbed the One Big Beautiful Bill, contains giveaways so generous that they may reignite inflation, many economists and strategists believe. What's more, they'll hit consumer pocketbooks early next year, making the path for the Federal Reserve and the economy a bit bumpy. Because the law makes tax changes retroactive through 2025, some analysts are expecting what J.P. Morgan Asset Management is calling a, quote, refund surge, unquote. The group's chief global strategist, David Kelly, wrote in late August that the IRS thinks, quote, far too much money will have been withheld from taxpayers and refunds will surge in early 2026, unquote. Kelly and his team said they think the IRS will send an average refund of $3,278 to 104 million taxpayers, both the number of taxpayers and the average refund payment could even be higher. That, quote, should boost consumer spending in a similar way to pandemic stimulus checks, unquote, Kelly wrote, though since they will benefit higher income consumers more, they may not be spent quite as quickly as the pandemic stimulus, which largely benefited middle and lower wage workers. Quote, there will be some additional fiscal jolt, unquote, said David Kotak, co-founder of Florida-based Cumberland Advisors, which has $3.3 billion in assets. The combination of more money juicing consumption and still easy monetary policy will cause inflation to pick up, Kotak said USA Today. Quote, we're going to be boosting prices with pressure on a central bank to lower interest rates at the wrong time, unquote, he said. Traders overwhelmingly expect the Fed to cut interest rates by another quarter percentage point when it meets in mid-December, according to the CME FedWatch tool. Meanwhile, experts of all sorts, from investment managers and economists to policymakers and social scientists, continue to debate the impact of drama from Washington, including shock and awe policies like detentions and mass firings on everyday Americans. Quote, yes, I'm worried about the economy, Kotak said. I don't expect inflation to subside, roll over, and go down to some very low level. I do expect economic shocks out of an economy that is being shocked daily, unquote. But Ed Al-Husseini, a portfolio manager at Columbia Threadneedles Investments, believes the concerns about fragile consumers are overblown. Quote, the thinking goes, well, if you shock the confidence of consumers, they will become more conservative. They'll save more, they'll spend less, Al-Husseini said. Is there any evidence of that in the actions of U.S. consumers in aggregate? Absolutely not, just no, unquote. Al-Husseini is most focused on wage growth, which has been slowing since March 2022. Without it, he believes inflation has no traction. Quote, the simplest explanation, I suspect, is there's just not enough demand in the whole system, he said. It's a low-pressure system, sort of a deflating balloon, unquote. Obituaries. Joseph Al Gennell, G-E-N-N-E-L-L, age 68, in Rochester, New York, passed on November 30th. Arrangements are through the Profeta Funeral Chapel. Service time is December 5th at 10 a.m. at St. Cecilia Church. Susan R. Murphy, in Northampton, New Hampshire, passed on December 1st. Arrangements are through the Remick and Gendron Funeral Home, Crematory, Hampton, New Hampshire. Service time is December 7th at 1 p.m. at the Remick and Gendron Funeral Home. Giuseppe Joe Scarlatta, in Webster, New York. Arrangements are at the Anthony Funeral and Cremation Chapels. And Azencita, A-S-C-E-N-Z-I-T-A-M, nicknamed Cindy, Stebbins, S-T-E-B-B-I-N-S, aged 83, in Rochester, New York, passed on November 30th. Arrangements are at the Thomas Funeral Chapels. Service time is December 7th. Service location is Sunday with visitations from 4 to 5:30 p.m. and prayers at 5:30 p.m. Eight must-see holiday events in the Finger Lakes this season. By Madison Scott, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle USA Today Network. The holiday season is in full swing, and local organizations around the Finger Lakes are gearing up plenty of events the whole family can enjoy. Here are eight more must-see holiday events to check out in the Finger Lakes. Holidays at the Lake House on Canandaigua. There's an annual tree lighting ceremony. This beloved lakeside event will be held from 6 to 9 p.m. on December 5th. The tree will be lit at 6:30 p.m. There will be reindeer carolers and Mr. and Mrs. Claus. The Lake House Holiday Market. This new event for 2025 will take place at The Barn from 6 to 9 p.m. December 5th. Over 25 local vendors will be selling unique gifts for the holiday season. The Lake House Holiday Market will offer free admission, parking, and gift wrapping. Breakfast with Santa. The three Breakfast with Santa experiences will be held December 7th, December 14th, and December 21st. This event will include a holiday buffet, a kid's craft kit, and photo opportunities with Mr. and Mrs. Claus. Seating times are from 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. or 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tickets are $85 for those 12 and up, $45 for ages 5 to 11, and free for kids under 4. The Lake House on Canandaigua is at 770 South Main Street in Canandaigua. For more information on holiday events and to purchase tickets for Breakfast with Santa, visit https://lakehousecanandaigua.com/holidays-at-the-lake/. It's a Wonderful Life Festival and Parade. The annual It's a Wonderful Life Festival honoring the iconic movie will take place December 12th through December 14th in Seneca Falls. This year, It's a Wonderful Life Parade will be held December 13th within the historic Seneca Falls Village. This event brings together families, businesses, and organizations from across the region to celebrate community, kindness, and the spirit of the season, unquote, Festival President Heidi Oropalo said. For the first time this year, there will be a float contest. Participants are asked to donate their floats with holiday themes inspired by the It's a Wonderful Life movie. The winner will receive a $100 gift card. For more information and to apply for the parade, visit https://www.therealbedfordfalls.com/parade. East Bloomfield's Historical Society Christmas Party and Live Auction. The annual East Bloomfield Historical Society Christmas Party and Live Auction will be held December 6th. A cocktail hour with live music from the Day Brothers will start at 6 p.m. The auction will begin at 7 p.m. Admission is $10 and will include an auction paddle and refreshments. The auction will include an airplane ride, theater tickets, unique collectibles, art, wine, strong Museum of Play passes, and more. The East Bloomfield Historical Society is located at 8 South Avenue in East Bloomfield, Ontario County. The Community Messiah Sing-Along. The annual Community Messiah Sing-Along at the First Congregational Church of Canandaigua will be held December 7th. Rehearsals will begin at 1 p.m. and the performance will be at 3 p.m. This over 40-year-old tradition will include performances from soloists, musicians, and a full choir from music director Christy Ingersoll and organist Daniel Chang. The First Congregational Church of Canandaigua is located at 58 North Main Street in Canandaigua. For more information, visit https://canandaiguachurch.org/ or call 585-394-2184. The Genesee Country Village and Museum Holiday Events. Before I read this, I'm just going to remind you that you're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Democrat and Chronicle and the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. So back to holiday events in the Finger Lakes area this season. And the Genesee Country Village Museum Holiday Events is next. Breakfast with St. Nick. Two Breakfasts with St. Nick experiences will be offered from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. December 7th and December 21st. These events will include breakfast at the Genesee Country Village and Museum's Meeting Center, photos with Santa, and opportunities to write letters to the North Pole. Tickets are $20 for those over 12, $14 for those ages 4 to 12, and free for children under 4. Holiday Open House. Two holiday open houses will be held from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., one on December 7th and one on December 21st. Guests will be able to stroll through each home and see how 19th century families celebrated the holidays. There will be music, festive baking, storytelling, and opportunities to meet St. Nick. Tickets are $14 for non-members over the age of 12, $9 for members, and free for children 12 and younger. Genesee Country Valley Museum is at 1410 Flint Hill Road in Mumford. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit https://www.gcv.org/holiday-happenings/. The reporter, Madison Scott, is a journalist with the Democrat and Chronicle who covers breaking and trending news for the Finger Lakes region. She has an interest in how the system helps or doesn't help families with missing loved ones. She can be reached at mdscott@ganay.com. Remembering Roseland, new film brings a lost Finger Lakes amusement park back to life. By Mike Murphy, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network, from Canandaigua. Ever since Rochester produce merchant William Maurer, M-U-A-R, opened the gates to the Roseland Park on Canandaigua Lake in 1925, people met and made lifelong friends there. For many, romance bloomed at the amusement park in the 60 years it operated. Many also worked their first jobs at Roseland when they were young. Many, many people have childhood memories of going to Roseland with their families to have fun, said Benjamin Falter, Director of Education at the Ontario County Historical Society and creative force behind a new documentary film project about the park, Remembering Roseland. Of course, many people mourned the loss and remain in mourning this year, the 100-year anniversary of its opening, when the museum park closed its doors in 1985. All of that speaks to the cultural impact the park had on the Canandaigua community and Finger Lakes region and why the amusement park still resonates with people, Falter said. Quote, it was a major part of this area for 60 years, and really, when you have this beloved cultural icon in your community for 60 years, it's going to leave its mark, unquote, Falter said. The roughly 45-minute documentary Remembering Roseland, which premieres December 5th, largely consists of the Ontario County Historical Society's archival photos of the amusement park, its rides, and the people who visited. The Historical Society Museum possesses recorded footage of the park from over the years, especially toward the end of its existence, so snippets of its collection are part of the finished product. Falter also interviews several people who worked there, as well as authors of the 2007 book, Roseland, Playground of the Finger Lakes, on which he relied for interesting, fascinating stories, historical value, and inspiration. Ghost of Roseland artist Benji Carr and Judy Cermak, an organizer behind the Public Art Sculpture Project, which was unveiled at Canandaigua Lake earlier this year, also were interviewed for their insight into the park and its impact on them and the community. Falter, who calls video editing a hobby, started research for the project late last year, just before the park's 100th anniversary this year. It's become the thing he's been working on for the last couple of months as the premiere has drawn closer, he said. Quote, the video was really fun to put together, unquote, Falter said. Linda McCurdy-Hotra, who with Sherman Farnham co-authored Roseland, Playground of the Finger Lakes, calls the amusement park a place for happy times with a formula for fun. This, quote, Playground of the Finger Lakes, unquote, offered traditional favorites like the carousel and the addition over the years of novelty attractions like the Skyliner, a wooden roller coaster, and Flying Bobs. Quote, because the park was only open for a few months each year, anticipation was a key ingredient in its success, McCurdy-Hotra said in an email, adding that patrons of all ages eagerly look forward to events like Report Card Day, the free acts, and fireworks displays. Over time, other funtime attractions like Willow Point Park and Olympic Park in the Rochester area closed, leaving Seabreeze Amusement Park and Roseland as the two primary amusement centers in the region. Now only Seabreeze remains, but back then it seemed fans expected Roseland visits would always be part of their summertime activities, McCurdy-Hotra said. Quote, losing this favorite place fueled everlasting nostalgia, she said. No, social media sites are proof that whether people visited or worked at Roseland, they mourn its loss. Their viewpoint doesn't account for the difficulties faced by the Boyce family, the park's final owners, in making the decision to close Roseland. Happy recollections of, quote-unquote, everything Roseland are what it's all about. Cermak, who worked there as a teen, said Roseland was a very special place, kind of like a fantasy world where people came in to have fun, play games, be adventurous, enjoy sitting by the lake, and be with their family and friends for special occasions. The memories of Roseland are one of the reasons why the Ghost of Roseland is something special to see. Quote, the installation of the Ghost of Roseland has rekindled the memories of a joyful time and place for many, Cermak said. I see people telling their stories about the park to others as they look at the sculpture. Roseland Amusement Park is still with us, unquote. Respect for Roseland Park's story. Falter, born in 1994, was too young to have visited Roseland. But when he first began to work at the Ontario County Historical Society in 2021, he quickly learned just how much people loved Roseland and how much they really missed the park and its impact on their lives. Quote, I've tried to do my best to do justice to the park and its story and put together something people can enjoy, Falter said. I think it does a good job of giving an overview of the park, and I hope that people agree with me, unquote. The reporter, Mike Murphy, covers Canandaigua and other communities in Ontario County and writes the Eat, Drink, and Be Murphy food and drink column. Follow him on X at MPN_Mike Murphy. Holiday Market at Boardhouse Brewing opens for season. By Mike Murphy, Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, USA Today Network. From Honeyoy. The brightly white-lit wooden railings and decorated wreaths provided the clue that it was Black Friday, the unofficial start to the holiday shopping season. The frigid cold wind from wherever winter's winds blow clinched the deal. The small booths that housed a dozen or so artists and artisans at Birdhouse Brewing Company in Honeyoy provided shelter from the wind. It says Birdhouse Brewing Company, and the title called it Boardhouse Brewing Company, spelled B-O-R-D. So I'm sorry, I don't know which one it is, but we'll go ahead. Erica Baps came prepared. A heated vest and heated socks were just the trick. And this metal smith hoped her hand-formed, hand-hammered, and hand-soldered jewelry pieces were enough to melt the hearts of shoppers looking for the perfect gift. I'm good to go, said Babst, whose Erica Babst designers of handcraft jewelry were among the items sold at the Black Friday opening of the craft brewery's European-style holiday market. The brewery also released a new holiday pastry stout, Midnight Perch Tiramisu, and everyone, including special guest Paul Leone, executive director of the New York State Brewers Association, gathered outside for the lighting of a 15-foot-tall Christmas tree that brewery owners Greg Searles and Scott Gillen noted, in keeping with the shop local theme, which also is local. Something about a small town holiday gathering with good food and good drinks brings out the festive in the season. The people are happy, said Babst, who used to own the Adorn Jewelry brick-and-mortar store in downtown Canandaigua. Quote, people get to be out and about, but it's still a homely feeling and everybody's cheery, unquote. Give Don Black, armed with the just-released tiramisu beer, an experience like this any day. It's just not as fun to battle the Black Friday crowds of shoppers anymore, the Lima Livingston County resident said. This, however, is a lot more fun. Quote, my wife loves it, Black said, and buys stuff every year and displays it all over our house, unquote. Helping out local vendors is part of the appeal, said John Yunker of Livonia, Livingston County. We definitely prefer the small-town atmosphere, Yunker said. Yes, technically, this was Black Friday, but talk of global and national retail trends, the pros and cons of tariffs, online purchasing versus malls and brick-and-mortar store visits, and the like took a backseat for a different kind of economy. It's our neighbors supporting us, Bep said, and we then, in turn, take our money and support our neighbors. It's nice to support small businesses. The money stays in the community when you do that, unquote. The reporter Mike Murphy covers Canandaigua and other communities in Ontario County and writes the Eat, Drink, and Be Murphy food and drink column. Follow him on X at MPN-MikeMurphy. In sports, it's crunch time. Five teams get bounced from the top 10. Nate Davis, USA Today. NFL power rankings entering week 14 of the 2025 season with the previous rank in parentheses. In first place, Los Angeles Rams last week the same. Yeah, they lost on the East Coast in a rainstorm. Quarterback Matthew Stafford uncharacteristically throwing as many interceptions too in the first quarter as he had all season entering Sunday. Maybe the only concerning red flag here was how the defense was gashed on the ground. Otherwise, we're giving LA a mulligan on this one. In second place, the New England Patriots, last week third. It's tempting to declare the team with NFL's best record, 11-2, as the league's best. But as much as quarterback Drake May and company have shown, we need to see just a little more and against better competition. In third place, Seattle Seahawks, last week second. We're super happy to have the best defense in the world. Wide receiver Jackson Smith, Njigba, N-J-I-G-B-A, with 23 receiving yards, said on his quietest day of the 2025 season. But how far can it carry the Hawks if the offense continues to disappear? Green Bay Packers, we're in fifth last week, beat the arch-rival Bears on Sunday to complete a three-game sweep of the NFC North in a three-week period, and the Pack might just find itself atop the conference standings. In fifth place, the Denver Broncos last week in fourth. In some respects, they resemble a Rocky Mountain version of the Seahawks, sporting an often dominant defense and a quarterback who can be great and also a total wild card. In sixth place, the Houston Texans, 11th last week. The Seahawks allegedly have the best defense in the world, but the numbers support the Texans, who are allowing the fewest points and yards per game in the league. Now, is it good enough to snap a five-game losing streak to the Chiefs? In seventh place, the Buffalo Bills, who last week were in 12th. The league's number one rushing attack is fresh off producing a season-high 249 yards, which are also the most gained at Pittsburgh in half a century. In eighth place, Chicago Bears, last week they were 15th. They've swept the NFC East. They've swept Pennsylvania. If the team currently sitting atop the NFC can win at Lambeau Field on Sunday, then any notions of fraudulence should be fully put to bed. In ninth place, Jacksonville Jaguars, last week 13th. They're 4-1 since their return from London and can take outright possession of the AFC South's top spot by beating the Colts on Sunday. And in 10th place, San Francisco 49ers. Last week, they were 14th. They only leave Silicon Valley once more in the regular season. And at 9-4, the Niners are very much in the mix to snag home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs. The last one I'm going to read through is the Philadelphia Eagles in 11th place last week, 6th. Wide receiver A.J. Brown is averaging 7.3 catches and 91.3 receiving yards with 3 touchdowns in Philly's 4 losses. In his 7 other games, all wins, he's averaging 47.7 yards and 3.9 receptions with 3 touchdowns. So tell us again how important it is that you get the ball, A.J. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Democrat and Chronicle and the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Continuing with the ranking of the NFL teams, I'm just going to read their ranking right now, not the whole paragraph. Number 12, Detroit Lions, who were ninth last week. In 13th place, Indianapolis Colts, who were 8th last week. In 14th place, the Dallas Cowboys, who were 19th last week. In 15th place, the Kansas City Chiefs, in 7th last week. In 16th place, Baltimore Ravens, 10th last week. 17th place, the Carolina Panthers, who were 20th last week. 18th place, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 16th last week. 19th place, the Los Angeles Chargers, 17th last week. 20th place, Cincinnati Bengals, 23rd last week. In 21st place, Philadelphia Pittsburgh Steelers, 18th last week. In 22nd place, Arizona Cardinals, 21st place last week. 23rd place, Cleveland Browns, who were 24th last week. 24th place, Miami Dolphins, who were 25th last week. 25th place, the Washington Commanders, who were 27th. 26th, the New York Jets, up from 30th. 27th, Atlanta Falcons, down from 26th. 28th place, Minnesota Vikings, 22nd place last week. 29th, the New Orleans Saints, also same as last week. 30th, New York Giants, they were 28th last week. 31st, Los Angeles Raiders, 31st last week. And 32nd, Tennessee Titans, also 31st last week. In college football, Platinum Artist has Syracuse for a timeout. Rap musician Tusi commits to 2026 Orange by Emily Barnes and Jordan Mendoza, New York Connect Team USA Today Network. It's never too late to follow your dreams, as platinum recording artist Tusi found out earlier this week. The 25-year-old rapper and musician, whose legal name is Najur Lazier Granger, announced his commitment to play for Syracuse University's football team on December 1st. For every kid, quote, "For every kid who ever had a dream, make it a reality," Tusi said in an X post. "When Coach Fran called, I knew it was a sign from God. So with that being said, Syracuse, I'm coming home," unquote. Here's what to know. Who is Tusi? Tusi was born in Syracuse and moved to North Carolina at age 12, according to the artist. He's known for his viral track, Favorite Song, which was certified double platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America in 2023, has exceeded 262 million streams on Spotify, and the song's music video has over 330 million views on YouTube. Earlier this year, however, Tusi announced he would go on hiatus from his music career to focus on playing college football. Quote, "I'm chasing history first multi-platinum recording artist to go back to school and play Division I football," the rapper said in an August 18th X post. Quote, next year I'm going to be on somebody's team, mark my words, unquote. Tusi played high school football in North Carolina and is expected to play wide receiver. The musician took recruiting visits to Maryland and Duke and received an offer from Sacramento State. He'll be 26 years old by the start of the 2026-27 college football season. Granger is listed as a receiver on a recruiting site Rivals and is part of the 2026 recruiting class. Syracuse currently is ranked number 26 in the 2026 recruiting class, according to 247 Sports. Granger is not listed on the site. The Orange finished the 2025 season with a 3-9 record and went 1-7 in ACC play, finishing last in the conference. The Upstate New York Musical Festival canceled amid Tusi announcement. The quote-unquote Just a Little Music Festival Homecoming Edition, which was set to take place at Albany's MVP Arena on December 6th and feature a performance from Tusi, has been canceled after initially being pushed back from its original October 17th date. Quote unquote, due to issues with artist production and other circumstances, unfortunately, this show is canceled, unquote. The concert presenter, a little booking agency, said in December 1st Facebook post shared by the arena. Quote, our goal is always to give the fan the best experience. Refunds will be given through point of purchase, unquote. The announcement came on the same day Tusi announced his commitment to Syracuse. The reporter Emily Barnes reports on consumer-related issues for the USA Today Network's New York Connect team, focusing on scam and recall-related topics. Follow her on X and Instagram at @byemilybarnes and get in touch at ebarnes.gannet.com. College football playoff may encounter issues of logic. Tell me what's wrong with this picture. Unranked Duke at 7-5 remains alive for the college football playoff while 10-2 Vanderbilt is out. Try explaining that to someone who doesn't closely follow this sport. Heck, try explaining that to someone who does follow the sport but watched Duke lose to UConn plus four other teams. We could be headed toward a truly stupid college football playoff bracket, and I'm not blaming the committee. The committee just ranks the teams. The committee didn't create the system, a system wherein, and I want to reiterate this, a 7-5 Duke team is alive, and 10-2 Vanderbilt is out. 5-loss Duke can still qualify for playoff. Yes, really. The committee, by rule, is required to select 5 conference champions as automatic qualifiers. If unranked Duke upsets number 17 Virginia this weekend, it would be eligible for one of those automatic bids. Yes, Duke might need help to secure an auto bid. Number 25 James Madison probably needs to lose in the Sun Belt Championship game. But I repeat once more, 5-loss Duke is alive and 2-loss Vanderbilt is out. Dumb. Duke is alive. Number 13 Texas, which just upset previously undefeated Texas A&M, is out. Dumb. Duke could win the ACC and qualify with 5 losses, and the Big 12's number 11 BYU probably would miss the playoff if it finishes 11-2, with both losses coming to number 4 Texas Tech. Dumb. The playoff size is not the problem. I could live with the committee's rankings. The top 12 teams in these latest rankings would create a bang-up bracket. SEC boss Greg Sankey would squabble about Texas and Vanderbilt being admitted, but once the moaning stopped, the bracket would look pretty stout. Imagine number 12 Miami at number 5 Oregon in round 1. You in for that? I'd be in. Trouble is, we're not going to get that because the ACC standings and tiebreaker application has Duke headed to the conference championship game instead of 10-2 Miami. Duke is one of 5 teams tied for the second in the ACC standings. The Blue Devils own worst overall record of the tied teams, but the league's tiebreaker rules have Duke headed to Charlotte. So a Duke team that lost to Illinois by 26 points could be playoff bound. while our Miami team that beat Notre Dame is vulnerable of getting sent to an also-ran bowl. Dumb. We're not there yet. Virginia could save some sanity for this bracket by beating and eliminating Duke, winning the ACC, and snatching one of those auto bids. Are automatic bids the enemy of a top-notch bracket? I've previously shown support for this 12-team playoff model, but this screwy scenario of Duke being alive for the playoff in the first week of December, while undeniably better teams are out of the mix, makes me question whether any automatic bids are worth retaining, as the playoff's future size and shape go under evaluation. Or should all bids just be rewarded via at-large selection? Why should we have auto bids when conference champions aren't necessarily even the best team in their own league? They might just happen to be the team that drew the easiest conference schedule, or they caught a good break from the tiebreaker rules. When conferences were smaller, we could say with a straight face, conference championship games generally produce the conference's best team as champion. Not anymore. Conference expansion and the elimination of divisions disrupted the utopia of conferences crowning worthy champs. The ACC swelled to 17 teams and nixed divisions in favor of a united standing. Duke's win against Cal pushed it a step closer to winning the Atlantic Coast Conference. Think about that for a moment. Each ACC team played only 8 conference games. Put differently, Duke could win a 17-team conference and become eligible for a playoff auto bid after facing less than half the teams in the conference. That's dumb. Perhaps the playoff would be better served with no more conference championship games, no more automatic bids. Expand the regular season by 1 week, giving the committee one additional data point for every team in the first week of December. This wouldn't lengthen the season. You'd just be swapping in a 13th regular season game in place of a conference championship weekend. Then rank the 12 best teams and congratulate Duke on his bid to the Gator Bowl. The reporter Blake Topmeyer is the USA Today Network senior national college football columnist. Email him at btopmeyer, T-O-P-P-M-E-Y-E-R, at gannett.com and follow him on X at btopmeyer. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the Thursday, December 4th issue of the Democrat and Chronicle. Your reader has been Betsy Waugh. Thank you for listening.